All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, October 19th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And you put another inappropriate name in the Zencaster box here, I'm seeing.
That's I don't know what you're talking about.
That's going to throw me off for the rest of the podcast. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to get you started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. NFL, we also include NBA in our subscription package as well, which is free for 3 days. And then for, I think this is the last day or second to last day of $29.95 a month after that. So make sure you go over to dfsr.com/NBA where you can sign up for that free for 3 days and then just $29.95. It covers you for NBA, NFL, MLB while the time is still going, and then base projections for NHL.
Yeah, and some people had some questions about if they'd be
grandfathered into our old rates, you know, if they had signed up beforehand and, you know, if that would stay on for them. Yeah, if you sign up now or if you're signed up currently, you will maintain your current pricing into the future. So if your sub re-ups next month, it will be at that $29.95 a month rate. If you go for the full season package at $120, that will also just after 6 months, same rate too. So nothing to worry about there. If you sign up now, you do get lock in those rates for life, Doug, for life. And life, hopefully, is long.
Life is long, man. I hope I'm going to be able to attest to. All right, we're going to talk Week 7 cash game plays here in the NFL. Also, just a reminder, go check out our NBA podcast. We'll be posting that as well today. Great early season's return on that sport. So all your podcast desires fulfilled by James and I, so we'll record that after we're done with this one. But today, we'll talk about you know, some of the cash game plays that we see for NFL coming up for this week. A little bit of a weird week in the NFL. Not insane matchups across the board. We'll also be doing a game-by-game breakdown tomorrow for some of the guys, or a lot of the guys that we don't cover here today. But, you know, today here are some of the guys that we think you can kind of anchor some of your cash games with. Let's start at quarterback. I wrote up two guys that are coming off buys this week. I wrote up Dak first, and I still see him as a clear cash game play. I liked him a little bit better when I thought Elliott was going to have his suspension start. I mean, can we just figure the suspension out? I whether he's getting screwed or not, like, this is just too much. Like, he's suspended. He's done. Nah, he's not done. Nah, he's done.
Dude, it's a man's life you're talking about. Don't these things take time? You know.
Well, I don't want it to take time. I just want to have it known because, anyways, I had him written up with more confidence, I think, when there was no Zeke there. Now Elliott looks like he's going to play this week. You know, what are your thoughts on Dak here? He's had a pretty good season overall. Would it make you feel better or worse to not have Elliott play, or does it kind of not matter for you for Dak?
It doesn't matter. I mean, he's been excellent. I think the thing about Dak is that he gets it done, you know, in the air and on the ground. But really, the passing has just been terrific this season. So far this season, his worst game, 17 fantasy points, which would already be sort of serviceable on an $8,400 salary. And if you start tapping into the middle of that range, the 23-point games that he had in weeks 3 and 4, you're feeling pretty good. But then if you get the huge upside, you know, you snap off a rushing touchdown and you get his usual passing output like he did against Green Bay, he's got some of the highest upside on the slate too. So the profile on Dak is terrific and the matchup is excellent as well. You know, San Francisco have been one of the very worst teams in all the NFL in preventing opponents from gaining yards this season, Doug. So yeah, I really love Dak here. I think he's a very, very solid cash game play that you can kind of put there and feel totally confident in.
It's interesting. His passing performance and his just overall fantasy points have even come without really ever getting Dez completely going. Like, they haven't really used the wide receiver one. Not to say they haven't used it. They've tried to use them. They just haven't been able to. They haven't been able to connect with any great frequency through the air. And he's still right now the sixth highest fantasy quarterback sixth highest fantasy quarterback in the league, and that's actually a game less than just about than every single other guy above him on the list. So his per game average is actually, you know, among the highest in the whole league. So now I like him. I think he actually is going to be pretty chalky, at least on FanDuel, where the pricing doesn't really price you out of contention on some of these other guys. The next guy I wrote up was Russell Wilson, and it's really hard to know what to make of the Giants' defense. You know, last week they go in as pretty heavy underdogs to Denver, and then somehow pull off the win. The defense was supposed to be good to start the season. It really hasn't been all that good. Last week aside, Denver's not like a prolific offense or anything, but last week aside, they really haven't been all that good. What are your thoughts here on Wilson? He's also coming off the bye, though. He is coming across the country. I always get a little spooked when guys are going West Coast to East Coast, but coming off the bye seems to mitigate some of that risk.
Yeah, I think that does mitigate the risk, but Wilson's kind of weird. I mean, he's kind of like Dak in terms of his overall profile, except he's a little bit worse. Like, the completion percentage hasn't been quite as good on average. the yardage has been a little lower, the rushing yards are a little bit lower. So he's kind of like a poor man's Dak at this point. And yeah, I don't think the Giants have an excellent defense by any stretch, but I think if I'm going to choose between a quarterback at 8,400 and 8,100, like if I'm staying in the same price tier and these are my two options, I'd just as soon take Dak. I also think Dak has the higher upside. I actually think if I were going to pivot off, and I know we're talking cash game plays, but if I were going to pivot off of Dak for, say, a big tournament, I'd probably go in a totally different direction. Someone like, say, Drew Brees or something that just brings, you know, kind of operates on a totally different axis. Maybe even Brady go up a little bit. But for me, Wilson just kind of represents, yeah, it's like if Dak didn't exist, I think I would actually like Wilson for this week. But since he does, it just feels like I'm getting a slightly poor man's Dak. And then I just don't know why I would be doing that.
Yeah, no, I should have caveated that by saying I like Dak so much better than every other play. Yeah. It was really him in a tier by himself, and then not wanting to just have the write-up only have one quarterback.
Sure.
And kind of just move on. Now, I do, and this is mostly speaking for FanDuel, it's a little bit tougher on DraftKings where the pricing is sharper. Dak at 7,300, and if you're going to try to get in some other big money plays, there possibly is another way to go a quarterback. But at least for FanDuel, right. I think Dak sits in a tier by himself. I mean, our projections right now go Dak, highest projected overall quarterback, then Brady, then Wilson. And then the reason I picked Wilson was because he was the leader in the tier below, which was like the Wilson, Ryan, Breeze, and Mariota and Cam tier. Like, sure, they're all kind of priced in the same area. And I liked Wilson more than the rest of that group. And that's kind of where I ended up choosing him. But agreed, if it was going just between those two guys, our system alone likes Dak for like 15% more points. So, probably just should have caveated that by saying that at the beginning. Now, the interesting way to go here this week, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts, is on DraftKings, at least the way our lineups are setting up right now, and this happens from time to time, usually like around this time of the season, where pricing starts to smooth. DraftKings, we know pricing algorithms are they're just much tighter, right? So like you're going to get truer pricing on most guys as the season goes on. And right around this time of the year is when we start to see scenarios where, especially when there's a lack of punt plays, is the idea that possibly going very cheap at quarterback is the way to go. And I wrote up a group of guys. So right now we have Bortles coming in at 4,700 on DraftKings. I know it's Blake Bortles, and no one dislikes Blake Bortles more than I do, but it's Bortles. Nice. It's Brett Hundley taking over for Aaron Rodgers. And then I wrote up I have Tyrod Taylor in there. It's 5,100. It's like a scrambling quarterback. Could you see a scenario where going any one of those three cheap quarterbacks might be the way to go on DraftKings? Because like I said, you're really in a salary crunch, I think, this week.
I mean, it's it's not going to feel good, I'll tell you that much. I mean, I guess I don't mind Bortles on some level, as weird as it is to say that. He certainly had games. I mean, the thing that Bortles brings is like his game against Baltimore where he scored 28 fantasy points. The fact that he can do that on this $4,700 salary is like obviously a points per dollar upside that these other guys don't bring, right? Like, you know, say, I don't know who even would be qualified here. Say Dak, you know, he's very unlikely to score 40 fantasy points. So the fact that Bortles can bring that for you, I think represents for me that his floor should actually be a little bit higher than, you know, kind of what we've seen in some weeks so far. Like, for instance, when they beat Pittsburgh, he only had 14 pass attempts. Like, I would guess that on average, that's going to be totally outside the realm of normal expectation. Then a fairly tough matchup with the Jets, fairly tough matchup with Houston. I think that Bortles is a fairly reasonable play. I think Hundley, you're basically just throwing up a Hail Mary. I don't, you know, there's no track record or whatsoever. Like, he could just be good, he could be terrible. Anyone who says that they know one way or the other is just lying to you. And then when it comes to Taylor, you know, we've recommended playing Taylor in the past, and if Dak is the best version of Dak and Wilson is a slightly poor man's Dak, Tyrod Taylor is like the middle school version of those guys where it's just kind of like the rushing is kind of there, but it's been kind of bad recently. The passing is both lower attempts and lower yards and lower completions. But you also pay less too. So I don't really know. I mean, I think if I had to choose between these guys, I'd go Bortles. I don't know if that's where I am hoping to settle in though, as we go into Sunday here.
I'm not hoping to settle there either. I think, but the thing is, like, it's just a price thing. I don't like saying the name Blake Bortles either, right? Like, it's just, it feels terrible to do
it.
But
you have a lot of good plays in the mid range, right? Like, it's going to be hard to, and we'll get to these guys, I'm sure, but like, it's going to be hard to pick between who you walk away from. You know, Fitzgerald at 7,300, you walk away from Landry at 68, you walk away from Mark Ingram, you know? Because if you want to keep playing those guys, if you want to keep saying yes to these good plays at other positions, then you have to say no to somebody. And, you know, if that happens to be a quarterback, that might not feel great. But, you know, when you're getting a point per reception from other spots, then you might feel a little bit better. But I would guess on DraftKings, like, we actually might settle on Russell Wilson. The difference between him and Dak on this site is that he's actually almost the full 1,000 cheaper. And that actually does matter a lot when each dollar really, you know, is the difference between playing someone who's just a complete, you know, no name kind of backup, a bum type, or, you know, or even going from someone like Pierre Garçon up to Jarvis Landry, you know. So I think I could see settling in on Wilson. I could see settling in on Dak. And the payoffs would have to be pretty profound for me to feel good about Bortles, Taylor, or Hundley.
Yeah, no. And last thing is, Bortles at 4,700. Really, all you're hoping there in cash is for him to just not completely kill you, right? Like, you're hoping like 2.5x and that they don't run the ball the entire game with Fournette. But, that's what they've wanted to do this whole season, and they should do that because Fournette's clearly the best player, and Bortles is just kind of out there as a placeholder. All right, let's talk about some of these running backs. We saw Mark Ingram, predictably, or at least from our point of view, take over that running back one role last week with the absence of Adrian Peterson when he left through the trade. Price on him does climb a little bit this week. The site's had time to just kind of factor him in, factor his new role in. But I don't think it climbed enough. I mean, 7,100 on FanDuel, 67 on DraftKings. He catches balls out of the air. They ran him a ton. He's the goal line back here. Is he, do you think, even with the price increase, is he a chalk player? Do you think people get thrown off when they see, oh, he was 5,900 last week and he's 71 now? Do you think that plays in people's minds, or do you think they'll just be fine going right back to Ingram after his performance last week?
I would guess people will be fine going back to him here, and I think it, of course, makes perfect sense. It's worth noting on Ingram, like, when we're in the tempering our expectations category, sure, he had 30 touches last game, and that's just a tremendous amount, and obviously a lot of that increase had to do with the fact that Peterson's now off the team. But just keep in mind that they scored 52 points in this game, you know, so by no means was it a regular game, and I would guess that this will still be his greatest total touches over the, you know, when the season's all said and done, just knowing how the Saints kind of deploy their running backs, how much they like Kamara. So I like Ingram. I don't think I can confidently say that he, well, I think he'll justify a $7,100 price tag, but last week he looked like an $8,000 plus running back. I think he's still a little bit cheap, but I think some people are a little bit overly exuberant over what his potential is right now because of such a wonky game last week. Now, I could be proven wrong. Like, if he goes out there and some more normal game script against Green Bay and he gets 21 carries and 4 receptions, then I'm still going to love the guy, right? So, you know, trying to take that all with a grain of salt. But I just think that people should be a little cautious looking at 1 week and seeing a real reason. You know, even if there is causation, it doesn't mean the exact result we got is what we can expect going forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, in terms of implied usage here, we have him for 17 carries and 5 targets, right? So, like, it's not like we're... It's not like we're bumping him
in. Well, we're really smart, Doug. That's the thing you got to realize. I'm talking to the people that aren't quite as smart as you in particular, and then us, even if you average us out.
So I still don't like him. I'm not willing to completely bump him into that upper tier of guys whose teams have just basically come out and said, "This, we're going to ride you till you die" territory. But I could see it for Ingram. The existence of Kamara does temper it a little bit for me because they want to get him involved as well, third downs. I do like that, though, that Breeze throws to Ingram, even as a, like, you know, a lot of times you see your first and second down backs not really be involved at all in the passing game. That's the reason the third down back exists. Ingram still fits the role of first down and second down, but they will throw to him as well. So, like, that is, there isn't a huge class of guys that are like that. Ingram is one of them. And if the touches are going to be up and over 20, the price, he is more like an $8,000 running back, at least on FanDuel, that you're getting for 7,100. I think it ends up being that most people, I think, see that. But I do know that the price increases on these guys sometimes kind of screws with their head. The upper tier of guys is basically, I wrote up Bell and Fournette together. You know, Bell 9,700 now. At what point do we stop? At what point do we need to maybe stop playing him? Or, you know, where the touches are well over like 30 a game or something like that right now. But 9,700 against a slower Cincinnati team, pretty good on defense. I still see him as the highest floor guy of anybody. I'm just not sure if the 9,700 gets there on his floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky with Bell because on one hand, the opportunity in two of the last three games looks like this price is pretty reasonable. But if we look at the course of the whole season, he really hasn't reliably paid this price. So I think if we're looking at floor on a points per dollar basis, I'm just not sure if Bell gets home. Like 9,700 is a ton for a guy who 2 weeks ago scored 14 fantasy points.
That's kind of where I landed. I struggled with running back. One guy I probably should have written up and I didn't is Adrian Peterson. I'm curious what you think his ownership's going to be this week. So he's 6,300 on FanDuel. We don't have,
Really high is what I think.
it's weird. I think so too. I think I landed on that. I think so too. And I really wasn't there when I first started doing the picks. And I probably, like I said, I mea culpa here, and that I probably should have included him. I don't like that he's an underdog. I do like that they probably are going to want to run him the entire game like they did last time. You're not worried about like the underdog on the road, anything like that. And we really only have like a one game sample size on Peterson. So like he's not a rookie. So like we know he has NFL pedigree. He is getting older. There was another team that didn't want to use him at all. I just don't know like where. I'm not completely confident on it, I guess is my point. Although like I said, I am. Apologize, and I probably should have written them up.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's cheap and they just don't have any other options, And I think if we're looking at trying to spend up or middle out maybe across a bunch of other positions or, potentially pay up at, like, say, quarterback and maybe for Antonio Brown or somebody, I think Peterson really unlocks a lot of that in a way that's very pleasing to the eye. Because the other options, I mean, you can go with his old teammate, Jerick McKinnon, for 700 more. I don't really feel great about that. You can go up to Le'Veon Bell, but that's a fundamental lineup shift where now you're paying down a quarterback. Or maybe in the wide receiver one slot. And so I think, given, and again, we always want to think about this in terms of the pairs, what we're giving up elsewhere and what we're getting elsewhere by making various decisions. And so, off the top of my head, I would rather go like Adrian Peterson with Antonio Brown rather than something like Le'Veon Bell. And let's see, I don't even know who these cheaper wide receivers are, like Le'Veon Bell and Pierre Garçon, or Le'Veon Bell. And Sterling Shepard, and that like those, because those are the kinds of decisions you wind up having to make if you want to allocate the money in those ways. And I think that the cheap wide receivers, the guys below 7,000, Peterson seems so much safer than them to me. And even on the high end, like if I was just playing Brown versus Le'Veon Bell straight up on a points per dollar basis, and if I was just looking for floor, I think I would prioritize Brown there as well. So I think I like both sides of that a little bit better. And then that would lead me to want to pick that duo over the Bell and wide receiver X duo.
Yeah, no, I think the system actually will probably also land there as well. And like I said, we don't often pick running backs that are underdogs just because that doesn't typically lead to fantasy success. I mean, Peterson's not a huge underdog here, so it's a
No.
not a strict case of just like him gonna plank from completely from behind or whatever. But I think that is probably at least on FanDuel where it ends up. I don't think it ends up there on DraftKings. He's probably too expensive there, and you're probably worried enough about the PPR aspect that I don't think Peterson gets home on his DraftKings price. But FanDuel, it's going to be close, and I think in the end he's probably there. Wide receiver, I think I in the same class of really expensive guys, Antonio Brown is 9,300 as well. He, like Bell, these guys are just it's just another season of them being so far ahead of the rest of the group in terms of where their team uses them. I think it would be weird for me to not to play neither of them, let's say. Okay. But it's also very difficult to play both of them. If you were to prioritize and I'm putting him in this class of just like, they both lead the league in touches. Brown is eight targets more than the next closest guy. I mean, and that's Hopkins. And he's basically like 16 targets more than the third guy on the list. Like he's just so far ahead of the group in terms of how they're using him in terms of targets. It'd be weird to not play cash with neither Bell nor Brown. Would you play Brown over Bell in this case just because of the rest of the wide receiver class?
I would, yeah. I think that, and again, given that we have good cheap running back options, I think Brown is, especially now, given that wide receiver has turned into a position with just one tier of a guy who's kind of at the top of it, and then a whole host of dudes below him in the 1A sort of category. Yeah, Brown does have a couple stains on his track record this season, but four of his six games, 21 or more fantasy points, that's just insane. And it's just not something you're finding at similar price points at other positions. So, yeah, I'm happy to pay up for Brown.
Now he's in a good, and he's going to face, I mean, a quarterback grouping, a group of like Adam Jones, I guess like Dre Kirkpatrick. It's not the Cincinnati cornerback group is not elite shutdown class. He's not going to get shadow covered by anybody. So I just this is I think a better spot for him than it is for Le'Veon. And like I said, I think you do need to probably play one of the two. And the fact that you're starting three wide receivers and this group, and he's just in a class of his own. It's not even really close. It's just nuts how many times they're willing to throw him the ball. That's been a year over year over year. Playing for the Steelers, and it doesn't seem likely to change now. And it's not completely matchup independent, and it's not completely price independent. But Brown, probably more than any other guy, rises to the top of that hyperbolic list of what do you call it? Matchup independent, I guess. Brown. That's right, matchup proof. I hate that term. But he's getting pretty damn close to that. Other guys that I have here are two other just target guys whose prices still are climbing, but they're not completely there. Larry Fitzgerald, Jarvis Landry. Some conversion problems here with the both of them, but they're both, Fitzgerald 7,500, Landry 7,000. I don't love that Cutler's throwing to Landry, but Cutler's just, he makes up for it by just throwing to him so much. How do you view these guys in terms of safety for cash?
I view them very positively. I mean, Landry last week goes out there, gathers 22% of his team's target share, 20% the week before that. Lowest on the season is 15%. We've seen that he can dip into, less than stellar production on these prices. But the like, if we're just talking straight up floor on a points per dollar basis, it's just impossible to ignore the guy. Like, he's just getting a target share that you're just not seeing out of most receivers in the league. And Sterling's just basically the same thing as Landry, except he's kind of a slightly better quarterback. So, I'm not going to rewrite any sort of book on these guys by sharing this information. But if you look at the guys surrounding these three, in terms of overall targets, you're looking at guys like Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen, and you just don't have to pay the same prices for what amounts to not the same production by any stretch, but at least, well, in Fitzgerald's case, it actually does amount to the same production, which has been kind of nuts. But at least the opportunity's there, and both of them just look excellent to me. And Fitzgerald, by the way, his conversion percentage, not too bad. I mean, 68% is the top guy in the top five target guys in the NFL, and you have to go down to Adam Thielen, who has nine fewer targets, to get a guy who has a higher conversion percentage. So, yeah, both these guys, huge floor. And in the case of Fitzgerald, we've seen huge upside. I'd argue that Landry has a similar upside too, perhaps not in this matchup against the Jets, but I think we're going to see a huge game out of him at some point, simply because if you just keep getting double-digit targets, at one point, this could have happened in their week two matchup against LAC. Always makes me want to say the Clippers, but you have 13 catches for just 78 yards. Nothing to write home about. That easily could have been 13 catches for 100 yards and a touch, which would have been a transcendent week. So, yeah, but like both of these guys, huge upside and happy to play them in any format.
Yeah, no, it's funny about where our projections land right now. We have Landry and Fitzgerald projected for more, at least on DraftKings, projected for more overall points than guys like Dez, guys like AJ Green. But the thing is with them, and I know that looks weird to say because those two other guys are bigger names for sure, they just don't garner the same amount of looks, and that really does add up.
Nope.
And I know that people kind of get spooked, get spooked by that, or they get worried that things look wrong when a guy like Larry Fitzgerald is projected more than AJ Green. But the targets just kind of the targets went out, right? And this is it's week over week over week. And the other thing with Fitzgerald is like he leads the league in red zone targets, so he's clearly the guy that they're looking for down and close. I mean, that maybe changes a little bit with it, having Peterson around, but I'm not gonna willing to have it shift too much. I mean, if anything, they just get him down to the red zone a little bit more than they were getting there without him. And then Landry, he leads the Dolphins in the red zone targets. Now they don't. That's not saying much. They don't get down there a lot because there's not a great offense, but these are the primary options for both quarterbacks when they're inside the 20s, and that's a huge gift as well. I did mention to consider Adam Thielen if Diggs does not play again. It looks like I think Diggs is not going to play. Thielen actually moves up close into this group as well.
Oh yeah, they're all in that same group. Thielen's been amazing. I mean, the fewest targets he's had in the season is eight. You can't get those kind of numbers really.
One guy I think we're a little low on. We can talk about this in the game-by-game breakdown is Demaryius Thomas without Emmanuel Sanders. He probably stands to see more of a target bump. I did give him some, and I'm wondering if we're just drawing a little too much on his up-to-this-season stats, where that could maybe shift a little bit if he's going to get completely force-fed the ball. We saw that happen for him last week. He falls cheaper than those other guys, and that's a guy that we'll talk about on the game-by-game breakdown tomorrow. The last position here, tight end. At tight end, you know, every week I kind of just say this is the bane of our existence. It's maybe, I wrote up Jason Witten. This is, I got to tell you right now, me writing up Jason Witten is true proof that I don't let results carry over into my decision making for to another week. I mean, there's no other guy in football is going to prove that more than just taking the zero that we took from Jason Witten when he's basically like led tight ends or is close to leading tight ends in overall targets this season. You took that same L with him. I guess he's not that close in targets. I take that back. He's not that close in fantasy points. You took that same L with Witten that I did. Right now, he's sixth in overall targets, though he has a week less than anybody else on the list above him. Where do you see him sliding in as a cash game play, knowing that that Dallas is at full strength?
It's not going to feel terrific. I mean, he's got two terrible games this season, back-to-back weeks with 1.4 fantasy points or fewer on FanDuel. Slotting him into the lineup, you're signing up for some times where he just doesn't show up whatsoever when the game script doesn't go in his favor. I think if they're at full strength, especially if Elliott plays, Elliott does dig into some of those short yardage targets as well. The fact that he has it in him to get a 3% target share in a given week isn't very promising either. That being said, tight end is truly terrible. I mean, when we look at these props on a week-to-week basis, basically, you know, like when Vegas is putting out numbers on how many yards they think each tight end is going to get, it's like Gronkowski with like 80 yards, so aka pretty much totally unplayable at his price point. And then it's Ertz, and then you can have a real conversation about that. And then it's some guy, whoever it is, with like 38 yards. And so I guess that's just what you sign up for by having to roster a tight end right now. So will I rule out playing Witten? I don't think so. I'm really hoping to not see his name in the lineup, though, especially for cash. I think the upside is actually really high for big tournaments. I mean, he's had, alongside those two really bad games, he's had two really, really good games, great games on these prices, like the kind that could win you the million. So I don't want to rule him out by any stretch. But yeah, for cash, I just wonder if, you know, maybe a guy like Hunter Henry, who signs were pointing in a positive direction for him and who we played last week and, you know, did pretty well for us there, if he might be a safer direction to look.
There's basically a list of like seven guys that all kind of were tied for me. Now I did some, I re-uploaded some of our like just matchup projections here, and Witten did fall down a little bit, but there was basically a list of like six guys that are all tied for me. And that list looks like Hunter Henry, Evan Ingram, Austin Hooper. I would kind of put George Kittle in that same group. And they're all, and Safarian Jenkins as well. They're all looking at 5,000 to 6,000 range. They all stand to get targets. They all can just kind of not show up. It's really one of those, like we say it every week, it's one of those dartboard kind of territories here with tight end that you know, some look good on paper and then they can just completely disappear from their offense because none of these tight ends, maybe Ingram, but now that just they don't have anybody else.
Well, we've done a pretty amazing job dodging raindrops in terms of getting guys' worst performance of the season. Like Ingram's another example where like he's actually just been good every game, like or at least reasonable every game, except for the week we played him when he had zero catches and 57 snaps. So like it's just completely insane. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think a reasonable approach, something I know you've done in other sports and in basketball, well, and in the NFL as well, when a position looks kind of uncertain and every guy is like equally unexciting, you just run multiple lineups. And I think we big time have the opportunity to do that here, given how tightly clustered these guys we're considering are, right? So you get Henry at 5,200, you get Austin Hooper at 5,000, you get, well, Safarian Jenks is a little more expensive, but you get Witten at 5,300. You can go down and get Kittle at 4,800. You can run all of those guys in like, you know, in 25% of each of your cash games and then just like rotate around your kicker and feel pretty good, I think. So that might be, if you're just looking for the highest floor, probably just taking a basket of tight ends makes more sense than going all in on any given play. Because while at the other positions, like as we were reading names, I was like pumped about Dak. I'm pumped about Ingram and Peterson. I'm pumped about three cheap receivers or going with Brown. And then I just feel sick to my stomach on this tight end thing. So that's probably what I'll do when it's all said and done.
And when you look at percentages of, you know, where the amount of times a guy is in our lineups, when we run optimal lineups, you'll see that it's pretty much set on all the guys you mentioned above. And then the three lowest percentage numbers all come in at tight end, kicker, and defense. And that makes sense, right? Because those are the highest variant plays and, you know, they're typically all grouped in the same price tier, right? Like all tight ends are basically around 5,000. All kickers that you would consider are usually between like 47 and 5,000, which is basically the same price. And then defenses, right? The same thing. Like you're never going to there's no defense is going to be more than 5,400 really, and no defense is going to be less than 4,500. So when all the available player pool is priced all in the same thing, and everyone's kind of the same, this is where you're going to see percentages all mixed up. And like you said, I'm happy to just throw a bunch of different cash lineups and hope to get there on like 70% of them with a tight end touchdown. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow, game by game breakdown, taking a look at every game in the NFL for Week 7. You can go and check out our cash game plays. Go back and look at our Week 7 recap pod, where we talked about last Week 6 recap pod leading into Week 7. And also go and check out all the basketball content that we have going up daily. Basketball crushing it to start the season after coming off a wildly successful year last year. So very proud of what we're doing with that sport as well. DFSR.com/NBA gets you that free trial to the subscription package we talked about. Covers all sports that we cover. We don't section it off by sport provider like some other places do. If we have it, you get it. It's just all covered under one subscription blanket, dfsr.com/NBA. Buddy, talk to you about basketball in a second. Week 7 game by game breakdown tomorrow. Oh, man, so much going on. I'll talk to you.
Can't wait.